further ado, I want to bring Cameron Resenda back out here.
I'm right here.
You're supposed to be on stage. The stage part? No, I have two questions. And please help me welcome our cast. First, we've got Neil Napier, who plays Dr. Kate Farragut. Dr. Doreen Boyle. Meadwin Fairbrother plays Security Chief Daniel Carroll. Second runner up is Jordan Hayes, who plays Dr. Sarah Jordan. Plays Major Sergio Belsaros. Kira Zagorski plays another doctor, Dr. Julie Walker. Hiro Sanada plays Dr. Hiroshi Itaki. Mr. Billy Campbell plays Dr. Alan Farragut. Yeah. Okay, do you want to make it? No, so can I do it?
Yeah,
I'll ask the question. So I just wanted to kick this off. We're going to obviously jump into your questions, but before we do, I just had two of my own. First is Cameron, as I promised at the very top of the day. You have a very interesting background, and how did you come to this script and come to write it? And how did you meet up with Ron, and what was our relationship?
Yeah, so it's kind of a longer story, and I'm sitting here just for a minute. I think you're referring to my time in Ethiopia. Is that?
I've been that far.
So as I mentioned to a couple of you, prior to this, I was an economist at the World Bank and for the Federal Reserve, and what I primarily concerned myself with was international development in developing countries. And I loved what I did, and I think what I did was very important, actually. But there was one experience where I was in Ethiopia, and there was a boy watching TV, and the boy was clearly gay in a community where that was intolerated. I know this because multiple people pointed him out. And what was sort of interesting is I went with this kid is he was watching Will and Grace on television, and you could see his connection with that character. And at that moment, my only thought was, there are all kinds of ways to make the world a better place, and one of them is politics, and economics is super important too, and I really believe that. But so are the arts, and I think just simply entertaining people and letting them know that there's a world out there has tremendous value too. So that's what pushed me towards television. And I think that's the story you're referring to, right?
Anything that makes television look good is a good story.
In terms of this particular story, when I first started thinking about Helix, there were a few things I knew I wanted to do. One, I wanted to tell a virus story. I think each generation has a fear. I think the one before us was that computers were going to take over the world. I think before that there were nuclear weapons. But I feel like for our generation, viruses are really sort of in the zeitgeist as a threat. And unlike the two things I just alluded to, viruses are everywhere. They're everywhere in this room. They're inside of us right now. And I think that was terrifying. And I still do. I knew I wanted to send it in an exotic location. And I don't know how many of you have been to the Arctic Circle, but in my opinion, it's the closest place to the moon on Earth. It's desolate. It's hauntingly beautiful. And it's mysterious. I knew I wanted to create a facility that was amazing. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with labyrinths, and when you sort of walked through this facility tour, that I think Bradley and Nex and Java, you probably saw what different parts were, and the mythology of the base is also hand-in-hand with the mythology of the show. So that was super important to me. And then the final thing was, I wanted to be a fast-paced thing, so we built into it this one episode equals one day. And what I really love about that is, we're going to start our show and end our show in less than 2 weeks.
So those are really the bones of the story. And once I had sort of the structure and the story built out, we brought on Ron Moore. I developed a show for Sony, and they said, you could work with anyone, who would you want to work with? And I said Ron Moore, sort of the way a voice is Santa Claus. And they sent it to Ron, and he was very gracious, and he wanted to be involved. And what he brought to it, quite masterfully in my opinion, is he really constructed with me an overall mythology that not only sort of connects our first season, but will connect all of seasons in a really sort of beautiful way. But I think this is what we saw in Miles My Last Friend, and I really love about that show. That's how it came to be. And then we pitched it to Mark, and to Mark's credit, this is an unusual show. Just when you walk around, you can see this sort of special. He took a chance on it, and I'm really grateful for that, if I haven't already said it a million times.
You can say it one more time. That's okay.
On behalf of all of us, I thank you.
Well, so, nothing's necessary. This was not just a chance. I love that one, too.
Yeah.
This was an easy one for us because it was so interesting, and I think it was one that definitely felt was perfect for us. And I think the only other thing I wanted to do before we then throw it up to questions, because we have a big ensemble cast, not like the aforementioned Battlestar, I thought it might be helpful just to go down the line maybe and talk a little bit about your character and what they do, and then we can kind of throw it up to the press.
Use the mic.
I'm Billy Campbell, and I play Alan Farragut. And Alan is the head of a remarkable team from the Center for Disease Control, who are sent north to, or called north to deal with the viral outbreak. But things are a bit more complicated than they would at first seem, not only in the base, but within our little unit. And I'll leave the rest of them to fill that in.
Welcome to the Arctic. my name is Hiroyo Gisanada, and I'm playing Hiroshi Hatake. I'm a director of research in this space. Unusual scientist. This is a little mysterious. Actually, I don't know who am I yet. So maybe you can enjoy the show. I'm so excited working with a great crew and cast. It will be great entertainment. No one ever see. Please enjoy.
Hi, I'm Kira Zagorski, and I'm playing Dr. Julia Walker. And I'm one of the top scientists at the CDC, and I'm also Alan's ex-wife. So I'm just going to leave you with that.
My name is Mark Ganima, and I play Sergio Ballesteros, the major in the Army. As we know, these kind of shows, there's always three components with the government, the doctors, the military, so I'm part of the military with an agenda of my own that we might see, we might not see. So watch and find out.
Hi, my name is Jordan Hayes, and I play Dr. Sarah Jordan, who is one of the scientists at the CDC on Alan Farragut's team. And Sarah is the young, ambitious, overachieving scientist who is very, very accomplished and on her way to becoming one of the leading viral pathologists of her time.
Bonjour. Wabashki Mingwen and Vision of Cars, Toronto, Bungie. My name is Mingwen Fairbrother. I play the character Daniel Aronoff, which is Hatake's Inuk adopted son. And he also is the head of security at the base. So if something goes wrong, I'm the guy to take care of it, I guess. Clean up on aisle 4. I take care of things. Make sure it runs smoothly.
Hi, everybody. I'm Catherine O'Meara. I prefer to be called Kat. I'm playing Dr. Doreen Boyle. And I'd like to be more often referred to as Doctor, as I am a veterinarian and not always recognized as such. I'm also an epizoologist, and I'm on Alan's crack team. We have a past together, Alan and I. And very happy to see you all here today. And I'm gonna get her done.
Hi, my name is Neil Napier. I too like to be called Cat. I play Dr. Peter Farragut, brother to Dr. Alan Farragut. I've been up at base for a couple of years. I'm a research scientist, and I have a complicated relationship with my dear brother and his ex-wife.
Okay. All right, let's open up your questions.
At this stage of the production, how much backstory do you guys have on your characters? And if you don't have any backstory, how does it affect how you approach it?
We've been getting the scripts kind of as we go. A lot of television does that. You just, you know, next week it's like Christmas, you get a new script, you get to read all the fun stuff that you do. We have an arc that we've been laid out at the beginning. You have an idea of where your character's gonna go, but a lot of it gets fleshed out in the process. As opposed to four story? Yes, I'm just kidding. She's so interesting. We've been left up to our own backstories, aside from the guides that we were given at the beginning of the show. And then we have the directors kind of keeping us in line with the same flow and making sure that what we've created for ourselves works well with the story that they're going forward in the future. So.
Yeah, I feel we have a really solid understanding of where we're coming from, all of us. Not sure where we're going.
I second that. Thank you, Brandon.
I guess. Actually, I'm wondering about the science and kind of the medical component of it. Who is your science advisor? Who's sort of the doctor-y guy on set that's helping you out?
We have some people on the CDC that we speak to regularly. As I've said before, it is science fiction, so we push the boundaries of these whenever we can. But everything is rooted in science, and that was always very, very important to us. A lot of science fiction is 20, 30, 50 years in the future. We're really trying to think 3 to 5 years. Everything is grounded, and to the best of our abilities, it's reflected not only in dialogue, but everything you saw on the set tour today. It should all be right. We've made great efforts to ensure that it is.
Getting any insight from the CDC?
Well,
like, should we be worried about anything like that?
It's a good question. Whenever I speak to them, it's both encouraging and terrifying because science has come to a point where we can cure all kinds of things. There seems to be always a new thing around the corner. And that's sort of what we're exploring in our show, if it's the next big thing around the corner.
So since you're all playing research scientists, and most of your research scientists are doctors, is there a lot of terminology that makes it difficult to do your work?
YouTube has come in very handy, so okay. And I also have a brother-in-law who's a doctor, so I'll call him up and find, how do you pronounce this, or what is this? And they have technical advisors on set that, you know, I mean, I know the first time Jordan and I had a huge scene with all this medical equipment, and, you know, we just asked for him to give us a good, solid rehearsal with him and the equipment so we can feel like we know what we're doing and try to sell it that it looks like we know what we're doing and just get used to it. So there's a lot of people helping out, and YouTube is very helpful too.
Yeah, I actually had access to a veterinarian, a doctor as well, to get to speak to her about the ethics and the ins and outs of what we do as vets. So that was really very, very helpful. It's really nice to be in touch with somebody who actually works with the animals in that respect. Yeah. But it's been definitely challenging. Wikipedia is really useful in this instance. And everybody, Cameron's always been available to talk to you about different stuff, but a lot of scientific things we discuss.
I often ask that my technical jargon be given to other actors. And they've really been kind to me in that respect.
You mentioned earlier you were talking about military and scientists. Can you talk a little bit about the, I guess, the structure, the chain of command? Who's in charge of everything? And if a situation happens, what, you know, what's the top level?
You mean within the facility?
Yes.
Well, I mean, that's sort of what I think is the beauty of the show, is that the chain of command isn't very rigid. So Dr. Hiroshi Itaki, it's his facility. The CDC has a type of jurisdiction. It's never entirely clear who's in charge. And yes, we have a military figure there with his own agenda as well. If there was a rigid hierarchy, a lot of these processes would be in a more efficient way, but because there isn't, these characters are at odds with each other, and there's really no room to enforce the hierarchy regardless. I said this earlier too, but it truly is the Wild West in a sense, because even if there were rules, they wouldn't apply, especially when shit hits the fan, and shit is about to hit the fan. So all rules are off.
Can I just talk I was just whispered in my ear that we're going to lose, these guys are in the middle of shooting, actually we pulled them, some of them off the set, so we're actually going to lose Hiro and Lee Wynn in just a few minutes, so if you have any questions in particular for them, they're not going to be here after a few minutes, so do them now. Sorry, no pressure, but...
Well, we saw your character's office, which is a pretty sweet setup. But I'm curious, down the road, what's like the coolest set, perhaps pun intended, that you guys like working on so far?
The coolest
I've got in the fridge. It's actually
first
out of record. Yeah. No, that was actually. Was set to minus 10 degrees, and it's a lot of fun. Right, guys? Actually, the crew has a lot more fun than I do. But yeah, that's a pretty cool experience to have green screen and white screen mixed with actual cold and all that jazz. That's pretty fun.
Did you guys see the UV lounge?
Not yet.
Cool. Rest of the day?
What's your favorite subject? What's your favorite
set? Of course, my office. Especially my window is so big and green screen. So I'm curious, what kind of view can I see for each episode? I can't wait.
It's a tropical island. It's like a mood ring, changing.
This is my first kind of big show on this scale, and I grew up in a lot of small reserves up in northern Ontario where you can't even get there by road or anything like that. But we had a lot of movies, right? So we play outside a lot, we watch movies and we go play outside. And so we built, you know, lean-tos to be the office of whatever villain or do all the sound effects and as we're playing in the woods with our made-up guns or our lightsabers or whatever. So for me, it's really neat just to walk through the space. I'm sure you guys had a tour earlier. I love every set that's on this place. But yeah, I think my favorite would be the fridge for sure too. Just like, you know, it's cold. So all the acting is kind of taken care of it for you. You just got to do it. Yeah. Love the fridge. Because I wouldn't be able to say that in front of all the production people, though. They're not here, right?
For Hiro, what do you like about the most about the character?
Yeah, it's a mysterious scientist, but I have the nice drama, a lot of layers in my background, history, and also relationship with them. So I cannot tell everything, but that point is not only scientists, mystery, the human drama is linking for each character. So I feel so dynamic, like a Jet Coaster movie. Yeah, I'm so excited. Yeah.
And you know, just jump in for one second. When I wrote this character, it's a rare thing when you're actually picturing the character, the actor that you want. And this was the man that I was picturing the whole time when I wrote the character. And I think he's just done a brilliant job by just being who he is, because he is the most enigmatic character in the show, and he has secrets galore, and I really was thinking of you when I wrote it, so I couldn't have been happier when he was born. And on that note, we have to lose the gentleman. Thank you very much for coming out today. And we'll continue going. I
have to go back to the ice field.
We can still take questions from the rest of the cast.
So, what kind of research did you do, or how did you prepare for dealing with psychological implications of this kind of isolation at this type of facility?
Personally for me, I just live in Montreal, so to deal with the winter here.
It was all very sort of last minute, so that's my excuse for doing no research whatsoever. About as much research as I ever do for anything is to read a million times over the script. All the research has already been done, and so for me it's just read the script over and over and over again, and then become a nuisance about the script. So that's not very much to answer your question.
Something I had thought about, I didn't know this till I started working on the show, but I've been really grateful for every moment I spent doing theater once I've gotten to this part, because of how much she goes through, and it's such a well-written role for a woman. She's just strongly written. She's completely feminine, she's powerful, she's vulnerable, she's flawed, she's all kinds of things, but there was a lot of... I just was really grateful for all that time that I spent training in it, and training in story and all this stuff, and it's just... that was the preparation for it. It was just, I didn't know it was, but then I get in the situation and go, oh, I'm so glad I did that movement class, or I did this psychological thing in this one class, or whatever it was. So it's kind of everything I've done leading up to this.
Yeah, I found there was one film I found interesting was Werner Herzog's Encounters at the End of the World. It's up in the Antarctic, and it follows a bunch of researchers who are actually pretty well isolated. Yeah, it was kind of fascinating just to get a bit of an insight into the types of personalities that choose to put themselves in these really remote places and do the work that they do. They're really fascinating people. It's a cool movie.
And actually, on that note, I don't know how many of you have seen that film, but it was really instrumental in the development of the show, too, because what it essentially asks is, what kind of people give up everything they have in the normal world, fly in the middle of nowhere, just to do random research? And it's a very particular kind of character who is game for that. And we have 106 people like that in this base. So it's actually a very sort of interesting world. And as the pressure sort of starts to mount, you see how these types of characters, who in some ways are loners, in some ways are desperate to make their mark on the world, try to assert that.
The neat thing about this particular show is that all of our main characters, well, a lot of the CDC knew each other, but I didn't know anybody on this team of CDC scientists. So coming in from Vancouver for a show with 5 days notice that you're moving across the country to a new show, new people, new crew, new story, everything, new character that you're trying on, it was a lot like showing up in a place where you're a little bit alone, a little isolated, you don't know anybody. And you just kind of, as long as you kind of accepted that and tried that on, it kind of helped you, your process from one episode to the next, as you kind of get accustomed to working with all these people and everyone's different personalities. So that was kind of my way of looking at it, I think.
I was just going to say that in terms of research, I reached out and got a contact at the CDC and learned from her exactly what kind of educational background was required to work at the CDC and what exactly these scientists go through on a day-to-day basis. In terms of research for isolation, I actually didn't do any because it's the first, our team just gets to the Arctic, so we actually haven't been isolated. We've been working in Atlanta, and this is kind of our first introduction into the isolated base.
I just want to mention that I am friends with the CDC on Facebook.
Of course you are.
You guys said that things could go terribly wrong at this facility. What motivates them or forces them to stay there? Why don't they abandon ship?
We can't.
Yeah, can we? I mean, that's part of the story. There are constant obstacles that unfold to them, one, accomplishing their mission, and two, getting out of there. Part of it is simply the isolation of it, but the specific things will unfold each and every episode, and they're worth waiting for. So let's wait for them. Thank you, Mark.
Yesterday you mentioned that you commented that this was the most serialized shows you guys have ever done on sci-fi. So for you and Hal, I'm curious, what are the challenges, the excitement, what is there a daunting element to the idea of making a show that's so serialized the way this one is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's no question that, and I think there's a lot of interesting challenges with this show because it also doesn't go anywhere except maybe deeper inside of the facility itself. It's not, they're not traveling anywhere. You've got the sets you've seen, you've got these characters, and so a lot of it is about the internal strife and emotions and relationships with them, and then the uncovering of a mystery that takes them literally and figuratively deeper into the facility and into the mystery. I think for us it's really just about making sure that there is that path that these characters are kind of progressing so that one drives you into the next. And they've done, I think, a phenomenal job of doing that. And I also think what's great is then to see it all come to life. Because you read it on the page and then you see how these guys breathe life into it and the directors that we've had, and suddenly it kind of takes on a whole other dimension as well. It makes it really kind of interesting and kind of great.
I think you nailed it. So,
thank you.
I have nothing to add.
So you, Mark, you talked about kind of moving across from Vancouver all the way to Montreal on just 5 days' notice. Because Cameron's script is something, it's such a, I guess, unique concept. What was your first reaction when you first read the script?
When you first auditioned for the project, it took like a month and a half from the first audition to booking the role. It was a long process, but we didn't actually get the script. You got your set of sides that you audition for the character, and then maybe if somebody else you knew was auditioning for another part, you would kind of see what they said and kind of get some information. So we were actually kept in the dark as far as the script went. But then when I got it and I got to read all sorts of stuff, it's exciting. Like I was talking to the cast, every week when we get a new episode, it's like Christmas Day. The first thing you want to do, no matter what you're doing, is like drop everything and read the script and kind of phone each other and be like, oh my God, you see what you're doing? So that there's an exciting buzz. We're all like a bunch of kids in a candy store with the script, and the writing is fantastic, and they're tailoring it to who we are. At first, they don't know us, they don't know what we're like, what we're going to bring. It's one way, and then all of a sudden, each episode, they start going, well, he's more like this in real life. I think we'll cater to that and bring up this side of him, this side of her. And so it's been really exciting and dynamic and changing throughout the 7 that we've filmed so far. So, yeah.
When I first read the script, I got terribly excited because it reminded me of several different things which were sort of longtime favorites. John Carpenter's The Thing, the very claustrophobic, stuck in the Arctic thing. The Andromeda Strain, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I just was, I was a fan of the, I'm a fan of the genre. I love science fiction. I love, I love the situation. I love the characters. I loved really everything about it. And I became quite excited.
I think we actually are brothers. I didn't know that. Andromeda Strain is one of my favorite books.
Ooh.
Well,
we'll have to talk about this.
Yeah.
So whatever,
Billy just said, on board with that.
When I first read the script, I was very, very relieved to read these amazing female characters. And as an actress in my 20s, I've just auditioned for so many cardboard, one-dimensional goals, and so I felt very fortunate to, and I do feel very fortunate to be able to play this dynamic, intelligent, multi-dimensional character, and Cameron's done a really, really good job at writing these great, great female goals.
I was really excited. My mom cried, and I was really excited to be a vet, to play a vet. Personally, I adore animals so much, so, and I do come across some animals in the show, and so I was very very excited to play something, portray something that I actually had a personal interest in. So that was fun.
Yeah, I think what excited me most about reading the script is just how well layered all the characters are. And what excites me about Peter is just figuring out the flaws and the conflicts. Yet again, we come across a lot of cardboard, really one-dimensional characters in television, in my experience anyway. And it's a real joy and honor to be part of such characters with such depth. And it really is a privilege.
I think I already mentioned how excited I was when we talked about I love it. She's a really strongly, just a well-written character, and the whole thing is, it's just a great story. It's a great, great story.
Yeah, I'm curious. Neil, I think you mentioned your character has been on the base for a couple years now, whereas the rest of these guys are fairly new.
Yeah.
Do you feel like your character's turf is threatened at all?
I felt a sense of being threatened by them being up here. I can't give away too much about what's going on with my character. Frankly, I don't know very much. Really, I've been kept in the dark a lot. Again, that idea of not of having a really good idea of where we come from, but not where we're going. I'm excited by that also. As we're talking about reading the scripts as they come along, I don't really like reading scripts or plays. I suck like that as an actor. I find it tedious most of the time. But I love reading these. Each one that comes in.
I think it's worth expanding a little bit about it, because what brings our characters up there has a lot to do with this character.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in the pilot, and I actually put a lot of thought into this, so I think it's worth talking about a little bit. Years ago, and I told this story, I think, to Mark, but I was in an elevator in Manhattan, and I get in, and ex-girlfriend and her new boyfriend, and we probably went up 22 stories, and it felt like 22 years. And I thought, how could you can sort of reconstruct that in a television setting? So here's what we did. These two gentlemen are brothers, and they had a huge falling out because he was married to her, and he slept with her. So an explosion, and they haven't spoken in years. All of a sudden, they get a distress call. This is Peter is sick, and they're supposed to go back up there together. So these two haven't really spoken since the fifth bear, and we're having really the most messed up family reunion ever, in the most unideal circumstances ever. And that's really sort of the core of the emotional story. That's our first triangle. It actually gives way to a second sort of triangle, which is just as intriguing. But that's where we start emotionally.
And then they get stuck in it.
It's our bottle episode. It's great. Awkward.
So, what is the nature of this final operate? Some of the previews you released so far kind of made it look like the black ooze, but maybe that's just a symptom of what's going on. But is it airborne? What exactly, and does it kind of have its own kind of intellectual thought? I mean, are they combating something that's strictly
scientifically autonomous? It's a good question. Part of the journey of the show, though, is them figuring it out. The title Helix, Helix is a part of the DNA strand, but it also sort of implies the duality of everything that's going on in our story. And what we come to find out is this virus is much bigger than we initially thought and does have a second side to it. But that's part of the journey, too, and that's actually what they spend most of the first 3 or 4 episodes trying to figure out, and once they do, I think it's a pretty remarkable one.
Yeah, I would like just like to say, first of all, my heart was bad the whole time. I was like, tell them.
It's Mike. It's Mike.
I will say that one of the things that really intrigued us and that we loved about this was the, you know, the pilot is a great little pot boiler and it really sets, lights the fuse. But where they take it is really in new directions. And I think there's a lot about this that does really feel resonant of things you've seen in terms of the drama strain and the thing. And there's nothing more fun than to take an audience's expectation that you're going to go this way and go this way. Mm-hmm. And that's what these guys do so brilliantly, and it kind of expands the whole thing in a whole new way that we got very excited about and really kind of elevated it into something more than just another virus story.
The actors, how much do you know about what's going to happen, and how much do you want to know about what's going to happen, and how does that inform your performance?
We know exactly. How much I want to know, I really don't want to know. I really am, like, and I have always been on any show I've done, very much just not wanting to know until I get the script, because as Mark said, it is like, it's a little like Christmas every week. So I know, of course, what has happened until this point in the story, and don't really want to know what's going to happen. That's the purview of smarter people than I. So I don't know how anyone else feels, but
I feel very much the same way. Yeah, I like just, you know, getting little tidbits that goes on. We hear little rumors on set, but I never know if they're true, even. You know? It's really true. Because we're not going to get to experience it when you do. We're not going to get to experience the journey in a linear way when it happens. But we're getting our little opportunity to experience it now, you know, from week to week, block to block, when we get the scripts, and that's a lot of fun to not know.
I mean, the central question of the show is, what is going on here? And we want that to show on the actors' faces constantly, because they should be trying to figure it out right along with the audience. Good.
There's also parts, like, I mean, I love television, I love movies, and there's parts of that I don't want to know of the other storylines, because when I watch the show, I want to just, I don't want to have everything memorized, like, oh, this is when Jordan goes and does this, and this is when that, you know, like, I want to be surprised a little bit, entertained as well. I mean, I think this is why we do this, right? So, I try and try not to get too deep. Like, I'll read the whole script, but then I don't go back to the other parts other than the stuff that I need to work on. I want to leave that all and be as fresh as I can, you know, with that when it actually airs. So.
And, you know, maybe now is actually a good moment to make an announcement that Mark and I are pretty excited about. Right when our characters sort of think things may have made a turn, and they may have had a glimpse of a handle on this, we introduce a new character from the outside in the form of Constance Sutton. And she really sort of changes the entire dynamic within the base, but what we're especially excited about is that she's going to be played by Jeri Ryan, and she plays it beautifully. We couldn't have gotten a better person.
Are you announcing that?
Yeah.
Oh, we're announcing that.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
I like to just kind of know what's
happening. No. Good job. So exciting. No, great job.
I was instructed to bring that up at the appropriate time. No. It felt like the appropriate time.
It was.
Right
up. Sorry. Mark.
No, that's okay. That's okay. You can tell me
later. Glad you didn't tackle Cameron.
What are we announcing right now? Right? Our game.
No more secrets.
What episode is she's coming in?
Well, that's sort of part of the mystery, yeah. But, she comes at the right moment for the story, and she really does throw her characters for the loop. So.
Are you guys formally announcing
that,
or is this
like going to
that
whole thing?
Well, I mean, now
it's. That's yours.
I think that's
out.
It's out.
Too late now.
It's probably too early for this, but are you as actors still discovering who these characters are, or do you have a pretty good handle as to who they are as people?
I feel like I'm discovering on a daily basis, or on a weekly basis, yes. And, you know, in all the most well-written things, there's a journey, and we're on the journey, and thank goodness there's a journey, because otherwise it wouldn't be very interesting.
I think all of our characters are being put into extraordinary situations where we have to make very difficult choices, and within that, I think we're all learning different aspects of our characters. Also, we move quite fast. We move so fast that even getting the next script is one of those things where, in some ways, you're excited to know what's the next thing, but you kind of have to be in where you're at now and deal with that later or tomorrow when you start shooting the next block or something. But I'll often discover something in a moment while we're shooting it. Oh, that's who he is, you know. That's what this is. That's why she did that. And it's kind of fun like that.
And I think, as Jordan said, the characters are discovering who they are a little bit as they move along their journey. You know, I think they're discovering new things about themselves. We're, you know, in each different episode, and that's kind of fascinating for us to discover along with them.
And every character in this show, there's lots of other shows. This is like the landmark character that does this, and they don't really have much of an arc. But every single one of our characters has a pretty giant arc, and so to go along and just think that it's going one way and then all of a sudden it's a shift and you get this new script, I mean, it's you're processing on your feet, you're trying to make the best of it, and it's been a huge challenge, but I think that's kind of life, you know, you come at something and you adjust, and so that's what our characters are doing.
And every character is hiding a secret that will slowly come out at one point over the course of the series, so.
We have time for one more question.
Your announcement a moment ago kind of threw a wrench in the question that I was going to ask. In terms of the isolation, I was wondering, in developing the story, if they're in isolation, does it limit you in being able to bring in additional characters, even on like a guest basis, or did you have a planned way to do that from the start, or did you work it out later, obviously, to bring in Constance?
No, I mean, there was always a plan, and it's the thing Mark and I are both very conscious of is, I mean, you guys walk around this facility now. It's an amazing thing to be able to trap characters in this kind of place for 13 days because all sorts of wonderful things come out and the tensions are ramped up. And in moments, it gets claustrophobic and scary, and we play into all that. But there will be moments where they exit the base. There are things going on in the surrounding sort of area, and yes, we will be introducing a couple characters over the course of the series. But it's in a way that's very sort of organic to the story, and that was always the intention. But having said that, this is very much a show that takes place in the Arctic Circle, and the same sort of isolation you felt in things like The Thing, those sort of emotional currents are going to be here too, and we're going to exploit them in ways that, quite frankly, the movie can't because we have a lot longer to play with it, and I'm really excited about that.
It's like the location is a character.
Yeah, as is the base, absolutely.
Okay. Got it? All right, well, once again, I want to thank our cast and thank you, Cameron and Brad Turner for the tour. And we could be more excited about this show and have it get on the air and have everyone else, you know, see it in January. And we'll let you get back to work. But thank you very much. And thank you guys for coming out.